Sri Maitreya said, "Thus, when Kardama Muni, the progenitor of human society, was spoken to in fullness by his son Kapila, he circumambulated him, and with a good pacified mind, he at once left for the forest." Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Going to the forest is compulsory for everyone. It is not a mental excursion upon which one person goes and another does not. Everyone should go to the forest, at least as a vanaprastha. Forest going means to take 100% shelter of the Supreme Lord, as explained by Prahlad Maharaj in his talks with his father. Sadasamudvignadhyam. People who have accepted a temporary material body are always full of anxieties. One should not, therefore, be very much affected by this material body, but should try to be freed. The preliminary process to become freed is to go to the forest or give up family relationships and exclusively engage in Krishna consciousness. That is the purpose of going to the forest. Otherwise, the forest is only a place of monkeys and wild animals. To go to the forest does not mean to become a monkey or a ferocious animal. It means to accept exclusively the shelter of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and engage oneself in full service. One does not actually have to go to the forest. At the present moment, this is not at all advisable for a man who has spent his life all along in big cities. As explained by Prahlad Maharaj, Hitvatpapatam Grihamandakupam, one should not remain always engaged in the responsibilities of family life, because family life without Krishna consciousness is just like a blind well. Alone in a field, if one falls into a blind well and no one is there to save him, he may cry for years and no one will see or hear where the crying is coming from. Death is sure. Similarly, those who are forgetful of their eternal relationship with the Supreme Lord are in the blind well of family life. Their position is very ominous. Prahlad Maharaj advised that one should give up this well somehow or other and take to Krishna consciousness and thus be freed from that material entanglement which is full of anxieties. We are reading today from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, Chapter 24, entitled The Renunciation of Kardama Muni, Text Number 41. In the previous verses, we find Kardama Muni, who has fulfilled all of his responsibilities as a grihastha, desiring to perform tapasya, living alone in the forest. However, due to his natural love and affection, due to his natural desire to please and protect his wife and son, There may have been some hesitation in his heart. But Lord Kapiladev, his son, who had grown up sufficiently, promised Father that I will perfectly take care of your wife. My mother, I will provide her all transcendental knowledge so she will attain the same destination that you will. Now you may go. In this verse today, Kardama Muni, with a good and pacified mind, at once left for the forest. An amazing degree of renunciation. They're living in a beautiful aerial palace. They're living such a nice existence. But no hesitation to go into the forest where one's life is completely dependent on the mercy of God. Actually, we are always completely dependent on the mercy of the Lord. However, within our human civilization, we create an environment where we are not conscious of that reality. Srila Prabhupada would sometimes explain the importance of his farm communities. People should learn, really, how to live close to nature. Because by living close to nature, you have to be very conscious of how you're depending on God. If it doesn't rain, there will be no food, and man does not supply rain. You don't call on the phone and order rain. Carry out rain. Rain comes by the grace of God. Similarly, sunlight, by the grace of God. Today we go to a grocery store and we buy whatever we need. And we're not even conscious that the earth, the sun, the rain, the miraculous little seeds that just grow, they're all gifts of God. To understand our complete dependence on the Supreme Lord is knowledge. To forget that is ignorant. And really, this is what Prabhupada meant by simple living and high thinking. To live a very simple life in which our mind is not complicated. Our mind is not cluttered by all of these artificial, superficial impositions. But rather our mind can see as it is. How at every moment, with every breath, we are receiving the gifts of God. And to be grateful. And the nature of gratitude is not just through lip service, but it is to reciprocate. To be grateful to someone is really to reciprocate. Today is Thanksgiving. There are many interpretations of what Thanksgiving stands for. But one point of view is the early settlers of this country of America. They lived a very simple life. They didn't have grocery stores, or they didn't have department stores or malls. They were completely dependent on God. They were religious people. They were persecuted in the past, and now they were given some freedom to practice their religion. And they were thankful. They were thankful for the food, thankful for the land that they had in which they could perform their service. They were thanking God for giving them all that they had given them. That is really what the meaning of Thanksgiving was. In Krishna consciousness, we understand that to the extent our heart is grateful, to that extent, we can actually receive the mercy of the Lord. When Krishna sees that we are grateful for what he is giving us, Krishna gives us more and more and more. But an ungrateful heart is a hard heart. It is like dry, hard soil. The seed of bhakti cannot grow very well. The seed of love cannot flourish in such a desert-like dry heart. In order to be grateful, we must be humble. Lord Chaitanya taught, Trinadapi sunichena taror ivasihishnana. Amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Such an important verse, repeatedly emphasized by all of our acharyas. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami said about this verse that we should wear it, we should string it with the holy name. We should put on it the string of the holy name and wear it always over our hearts. To be humble like a blade of grass, tolerant like tree, eager to offer all respect to others and expect none in return. Only in this state of mind can we actually chant the name of the Lord constantly. You see, if you are proud, how could you really be grateful? Because if you're proud, you think you deserve. If you think you deserve whatever you get, it's not really enough. Or at least, maybe it is enough. I deserve this. Thank you very much. If you go to the supermarket and give the fair price and you get food, are you grateful to the institution? Do you say to the cashier, thank you very much? No, you paid the price and you got what you deserve. But what if you're starving and you have absolutely nothing and they give you all of that? Are you grateful then? You're very grateful. You saved my life. I don't deserve it. I have no qualification. When we have false pride, we have expectations. And when your expectations are not fulfilled, you become frustrated. You become full of anxiety. Sometimes you even become angry and spiteful. Why? But when you're humble, you do not have such expectations. Therefore, whatever comes is received with grateful heart. And that is the means by which we can achieve the mercy of the Lord. Prabhupada explained, we are dependent on causeless mercy. Causeless means that there's no cause in by which I'm supposed to get this, except just the kindness of the Lord. Causeless mercy means I do not deserve it, but it's coming. Then we can be grateful. And how Krishna reciprocates with a grateful heart. Tatenukampam susumikshamano bunjana evat mikritam vibhagam. Ridbhagva purvir vidadam namaste jiveti mukti padesa bhayavag. One of the most important quotations from Srimad Bhagavatam, describing who is actually eligible for liberation. Now, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he personally described what this mukti pade dayavak means. Because Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was an impersonalist. His ultimate and only goal in life was mukti, liberation. But when Lord Chaitanya gave him an experience of bhakti, prema, love of God, he did not like the idea of impersonal liberation. So therefore, he actually changed this verse from mukti pade to bhakti pade. And he was very proud to show Lord Chaitanya what it meant. He said, look at what I have done. And Lord Chaitanya said, you cannot change the words of Srimad Bhagavatam. He said, but this word mukti, it used to be my ultimate goal of life, but now I don't like it. Now I have attained love beyond liberation. And Lord Chaitanya explained, the perfection of mukti is bhakti. The perfection of mukti is love of God. So leave it as it is. So he said, all right, I will leave it as it is, but still I don't like it. But who is eligible for this mukti? For the perfection of liberation? This verse explains only the grateful heart. Only the person who is genuinely grateful to Krishna. And really, to be grateful to Krishna means to have a general grateful disposition toward all living beings. But not only grateful for the things that we like, but grateful for whatever comes into our life. This verse explains, even when one is put into a tragic, painful condition, if you are able to thank the Lord with a grateful heart and folded palms, then you are eligible for liberation. Of course, we must understand philosophically how whatever comes into our life, it may be due to our previous karma. In the worldly sense, all the reactions, good and bad, are coming according to our previous karmas. However, for a devotee understands that it is God's gift. There's a reason for it. There's an opportunity in this situation. I may or may not intellectually understand it, but my faith can resolve all these intellectual discrepancies. Because I know that God is good. I know that Krishna, his only motivation in every situation is only pure love for every living being. If this is happening to me, there must be some reason. There must be some opportunity. And I am grateful for it. One who could gratefully turn to God in a distressful condition is eligible for liberation. In this purport, Srila Prabhupada is explaining how going to the forest does not mean physically entering into jungles. Because how many people are willing or able to do that? Especially in this American society. Prabhupada is explaining the spirit of going to the forest. It means fully taking shelter of the mercy of the Lord. When you go into the forest, you have to completely depend on the Lord. There's wild animals. I lived in forest for some time. There were leopards. There were cobras. There were elephants, mad elephants. There were mosquitoes, food, you have to find it somewhere, somehow. You really have to depend on God. You have to really take shelter. It is that spirit that is required. And Prabhupada explains, even in the Grihastha ashram, going to the forest, getting out of the blind well, doesn't mean necessarily just leaving your family life. It means learning how to completely depend on Krishna and take shelter of Krishna with a grateful heart in that situation. And there are innumerable wonderful examples in our Vaishnava histories of such persons. Would you like to hear one such example? Yes? You have heard the story before, but I would like to repeat it. In the Sri Sampradaya, Ramanujacharya was the guru, such a powerful Vaishnava. Ramanujacharya was spreading love of God all over India. He had many, many disciples. One of those disciples was a Grihastha. He actually grew up with Ramanujacharya. But although he was like a friend of Ramanujacharya, when he saw Ramanujacharya just excel so greatly on the spiritual platform, he surrendered his life and became his disciple. His name was Kuresh. He married a lady who was equally devotional. Her name was Andal. By the grace of God, they amassed tremendous wealth. They had a lot of opulence, big house, a lot of money. But they were so much in the mood of service. From sunrise till midnight, they kept the gate of their house open and gave whatever charity anybody wanted. Just anybody off the street could just come in their house and they would give them charity. And of course, they would preach to them also. They were just so generous because they really just wanted to serve. God has given me this. It's not mine, it's His. I'm grateful. Let me reciprocate by using it for others. That's grateful. One time a devotee asked Prabhupada, "You have given us so much, Srila Prabhupada. How could we repay you?" Prabhupada said, "Whatever I have given you, share it with others." He did not want anything for himself. And that's actually gratitude. If we're grateful, we want to reciprocate with the person who we are grateful to. So because they were grateful to God for all that He has given them, they were sharing it with God's children. Now there was a great devotee named Kanchipurna, and he used to go to the temple of Ranganath in Sri Rangam, and he had a relationship with the deity where he would talk to the deity and the deity would talk back. He was a very simple man. He was not a very highly educated man. He was a very simple person. But he just loved to sing the glories of the Lord, and the Lord liked his singing so much because it had such devotion. He would just talk to him. So one time, Lakshmi Devi said to Kanchipurna, "What is that noise I just heard?" He said, "Because it's midnight, the gate just closed at Kuresh's house. He gives charity from sunrise till midnight, but the husband and wife do need some sleep, so the gate closed." So and actually they live far away. It wasn't that you could actually physically hear it. But Lakshmi could hear. Her ears are everywhere. And Kanchipurna understood her heart. So Lakshmi said, tell Koresh and Andal, I want to see them. So he went there and said, Lakshmi Devi wants you to come to the temple. She wants to see you. Now this is some distance away. Koresh said, Lakshmi wants to see me? Why? I'm the most ungrateful person. I'm very sinful. I'm very contaminated by false ego and attachments to the things of this world. Why does she want to see me? I have no qualification. But still, if it's your order, I must go. So please listen carefully. This is an important story from beginning to end for our spiritual cultivation. He took off all his nice clothes and put on the clothes of a mendicant. Because when he goes before the Lord and his consort, he doesn't want to go like a rich man. He wants to go before the Lord as a beggar, with nothing. I'm only depending on your mercy. And his wife also took off all her nice clothes and put on the clothes of a mendicant. And they left everything behind at home and went to the forest. Andal only brought one possession, a golden cup to feed her husband water. They had to walk through a forest. And it was night. And Andal became a little afraid. She said, this forest at night is... It's a fearful place. And Koresh said, if you don't have anything, there's nothing in fear of losing. It's only if you have something that you can be afraid. Fear is only due to attachment. Where there is no attachment, there is no fear. There are many examples of this. But you cannot put fear in a person who is detached. So she realized that she had the golden cup, so she threw it deep into the jungles. And then she was fearless. She had no attachments. So they came to Sri Rangam. And Sri Rangam happened to be the place where their guru, Ramanujacharya, was living. So Ramanujacharya arranged accommodations for them. And they were so happy to be with their guru that they actually left behind everything of their opulent home. And they realized real wealth is to be with our guru and serve him. So they lived as very, very simple people in a little hut. And they had to go out every day to beg for food. But they were with their Gurudev. Now this Koresh, I'll tell you one nice little story before I tell the actual story. Ramanujacharya had several gurus. Jamunacharya never actually initiated him. He just inspired his heart. Yamunacharya, at the time of his leaving his body, he indicated with three fingers, three desires that he wanted Ramanujacharya to fulfill in his life. One was to write a commentary on Vedanta Sutra. Two was to spread unmotivated love of God all over India. And three, in order to honor the father of Vedavyas, the author of the Vishnu Purana, he should name someone Parasara. So he was saying to his disciples, I have to write this Vedanta Sutra commentary. But in order to do it properly, I need to read and study the commentary of Bodayan. There was only one copy of that in India. It was in Kashmir. I'm sure you've all heard of Kashmir these days. It was a place of conflict then, and it's still a place of conflict now. Now he's living in Sri Rangam, which is South India. He had to walk thousands of miles. He went with Quraysh, his Grihastha disciple, all the way to Kashmir. And there is an ashram called a Sharada Peet. And there, he asked the people if they had a copy of the commentary of Bodayan. Now, they were impersonalists. So they were thinking, if he gets this, he's so intelligent, he's going to write a commentary that's going to refute us and we'll never be able to defend ourselves. So they told Ramanujacharya that actually we had a copy of it, but it over time it has been eaten by worms, so it no longer exists. So he felt very bad. And one night when he was resting, Goddess Durga appeared to him. It was her temple. Sarada means Durga. She came to him and handed him the book and said, you better go to your native place immediately, because if they find out that you have it, they will be after you. So he and Quraysh respectfully asked leave of all the ashram people and left. A few days later, they were cleaning the library and they found the book is gone. Well, this was very, very difficult. They decided, those two Vaishnavas, they must have took it because they wanted it. Find them. So a whole group of people were searching. It took them 1 month until they finally found Ramanujacharya and Quraysh in some forest traveling back to Sri Rangam. And they said, you have that book? Yes, we have the book. Give it back to us. And they took the book. Ramanujacharya was so sad that now how could he write the commentary without reference to that book? But Quraysh was happy. Ramanujacharya couldn't understand why Quraysh was so happy. He said, because every night when you were sleeping, I was reading it. I read the whole thing, and I have it all 100% completely memorized. Let us just stay here for some time, and I'll write it down exactly what's in it. And he did it. So that was Quraysh. And Ramanujacharya was so happy. He said to Quraysh that I am eternally indebted to you. I owe you my very life, because you have actually given me the means by which I could serve my guru according to his instruction. There was deep love for them. Now, in Kanchipuram, which was the capital of that area, there was a king of the Chola dynasty. His name was Koladunga. The Cholas, for generations and generations, were devotees of Vishnu. But somehow or other, this Koladunga was a madman, a sectarian fanatic. He was a devotee of Shiva, and he considered Shiva is the way, the truth, and the light, and there is no other way to mukti except through Shiva. Not in those words, but that was his mentality. He was really a fanatic. There was no other way but Shiva. And he wanted to convert the entire kingdom to Shivites. He hated anyone who liked Vishnu or Krishna. Now he had a minister. His minister's name was Chaturgram. This is a very, very serious story. Chaturgram was a disciple student of Quraysh and Ramanujacharya. And he rejected his guru and went to Koladunga and told Koladunga, because Koladunga was going around getting petitions signed that everyone must accept that Shiva is supreme. Chaturgram told Koladunga that Ramanujacharya is such a powerful person, I know him. If you do not defeat him, then he will make the whole country Vaishnavas. If you defeat him, everyone will fall in line and worship Shiva. They were fanatics. Actually, when Lord Nityananda went to Kanchipuram, same place, much later, he saw there were disputes between the Shivites and the Vaishnavas, and he simply left and went away. What is all this fighting? So he said that the only way you could actually establish your religion in this kingdom is you either have to defeat Ramanujacharya or you must murder him. Hare Krishna. This is Ramanujacharya and Kuresha's disciple speaking. He was a rascal. So Kolotunga took that to heart. And he sent a challenge to Ramanujacharya. And one of Ramanujacharya's prominent gurus was named Mahapurna. He was an old man. He wanted Ramanuja and Mahapurna to come to his kingdom. So in Srirangam, at the ashram, Ramanujacharya was preparing to go. But Kuresh, he understood the devious intentions of this king, because the guards had already come with weapons to bring Ramanuja back to the palace. So Kuresh fell at the feet of his Gurudev and said, I appeal to you, I beg you, give me one benediction. Gurudev said, what? He said, they're going to kill you. They're going to torture and kill you. There's no doubt. That is their plan. You are my guru. You are my very life and soul. If you're gone, I have no life. And besides that, you are nourishing the hearts and giving love of God to so many people, millions of people all over the land. I am just an insignificant fallen soul. If I die, there's no loss to the world. If you die, it is the greatest tragedy. The guards are outside. They're waiting for you. Please, give me your sannyasi robes, and I will give you my grihastha robes. You escape, and I will go to see the king in your name. Ramanujacharya said, how can I do that? That is not possible. But Kuresh was weeping. He was begging, please, Gurudev, give me this service, please. Because of his sincerity, Ramanujacharya traded clothes with him. The sannyasi put on the white robes of a householder and just walked out. And the guards did not suspect. He just walked out alone. And then all the other devotees started walking out alone and meeting him in various places. And Kuresh put on the robes of a sannyasi. And Mahapurna, he was an old, old man. He was Ramanuja's guru. He said, I am going with you. I want to do this service to my disciple, Ramanuja. So Kuresh and Mahapurna came outside, and the guards said, you are Ramanujacharya? You are Ramanuja? Yes, I am Ramanuja. Come, the king is waiting for you. So they went the long distance from Srirangam to Kanchipuram. It's a couple hundred kilometers. He was such an esteemed person, Ramanujacharya. When he came into the king's court, the king honored him with great respect, at least externally. He gave him accommodation, gave him a nice sitting place. He said, tomorrow I want you to come to my court of pundits where we're going to have a philosophical, scriptural discussion. So there, All the court pundits or scholars were assembled together. And the king asked Ramanuja, I want to know from you, what is the ultimate goal of life? And Quraysh, in the robes of Ramanujacharya, replied that Lord Vishnu is the Supreme Lord of all lords. To serve him with a heart full with pure love and devotion is the ultimate goal of life. When the king heard this, he flew into rage. He just started screaming. Haribo. Such nice technology. He flew into rage. He said, you fool, you offender. Shiva is supreme. Either you accept this or you die. He said, I'll give you a chance. He said, you listen to my pundits. You listen to my scholars and they will convince you. So everything the scholars said, Quraysh and Mahapuna completely defeated. By this time, the king was exasperated. He said, either you get tortured to death or you sign this statement that Shiva is supreme. Do you know what Quraysh did? There's two units for weighing articles in that time. One is called Shiva and another called Drona. Drona is heavier than Shiva. So he wrote, even Drona is greater than Shiva. When the king saw that, he actually said, sign it. And he signed, he wrote, and everybody, oh, he's signing. But then when he read, that's what he wrote. He told the guards that when I was only 8 years old, my sister was haunted by a ghost and Ramanuja saved her. So in this palace, I cannot kill him. My sister's here. But you should brutally gouge out both these offenders' eyes and leave them in the forest to die. So these guards brought them out to a secluded forest and with daggers brutally gouged out both of their eyes, blinding them. The pain was excruciating. There was blood flowing and flying everywhere. And Quraysh was thanking God. He was in ecstasy. He was thanking, my dear Lord, I don't deserve this. You're allowing me to do such an incredible service for my spiritual master. You're allowing me to take on this pain in the service of my guru. What a benediction. What a gift. Thank you, my Lord. Thank you. And then these executioners who were meant to just leave them to die, when they were about to leave, Quraysh was utterly blind with both eyes, brutally gorged out. He somehow or other, with folded hands, spoke to the executioners. He said, my dear loving friends, I am eternally grateful to you. Thank you. Because you have allowed me to perform this wonderful service to my guru in Krishna. When they heard this, their hearts melted. They realized this person is a saint. And they found a beggar and they gave him money and said, don't tell the king, but bring them back to Sri Rangam. Mahapurna was old. He told, after the executioners left, he told Quraysh that it's time for me to leave this world. He said, I am feeling so grateful to Lord Vishnu. He has allowed me to end my life performing this selfless, unconditional service to my disciple, Ramanuja. He is giving me the chance to die for my disciple. What a benediction. I thank Narayan for this causeless mercy. When you go back to Sri Rangam, please tell Ramanuja, my disciple, that I send my obeisances to him and tell him how happy I am to serve him in this way. And now with my mind on my guru, Yamunacharya, I will give up this life. And then chanting the holy names of Lord Narayan, Mahapurna gave up his body. Kuresh was brought back to Sri Rangam. But Ramanujacharya was already hiding in exile. He went to a hill station called Melkote, which is a very holy place even today. There's a temple of Lord Narasingadev there. Ramanujacharya spent years traveling and preaching in exile. Now, not long after Kuresh was blinded, the king, Kolatunga, got a horrible disease and died a miserable death. And his son, whose name was Vikram, his son became a disciple of Ramanujacharya. Now, please listen carefully. Years went by. Kuresh was living with his wife, Andal. And he was in that blind state. When he heard where Ramanujacharya was, because he didn't know where to find him, he was traveling around. When he heard he was not far, he had his wife bring him to Ramanujacharya. And when Ramanujacharya saw this disciple who was willing to die, who was willing to be blinded in the service of Guru, Ramanuja's heart just melted. He embraced him. He showered his love upon him. And all Kuresh would say is, thank you for allowing me to do this service for you. Thank you. Anyone else could have done it, but you chose me, the least qualified, to perform this service for you. Thank you, Gurudev. Ramanujacharya said, you go to Kanchipuram. There's a temple of Varadvaj. That deity bestows benedictions. I want you to go before that deity and beg for a benediction. Beg him to give you your eyes back. So Kuresh, on the order of his guru, went to Kanchipuram. And from early morning till night, he was just chanting the holy names, singing prayers, bhajans, and chanting the holy names with such love and devotion. Ultimately, the deity spoke to him. The deity said, Kuresh, I am pleased with you. Please ask any benediction, anything in the material or spiritual worlds I will give you. Just ask. Now, what would you ask for if the Lord gave you that opportunity? Kuresha said, I have one desire. Please fulfill it. That this Chaturgram, who was my disciple, who was my student and disciple of myself and Ramanujacharya, it was he that impelled the king to torture us and kill us. My prayer is, please forgive him. Bestow your mercy upon him and give him liberation in Vaikuntha. The Lord said, is that all you ask for? He said, that's all I want in my life. He said, so be it. He will be liberated to Vaikuntha. When Ramanujacharya saw that he was still blind, he said, what did you ask for? Now, you can't lie to your guru. He told him. Ramanujacharya's heart melted. He said, go back to the deity and ask for your eyes back. He went back to the deity. And from early morning till night, he was just singing the names of the Lord in beautiful bhajans. And Bhadar Vraj, our Lord, spoke to him, Kuresh, I want to give you a benediction. Ask anything and I will grant it. He said, this King Kolatunga, who was so angry, who wanted to kill me, who blasphemed me, who gouged out my eyes, who tried to... He's such a sinful person. Please forgive him. Please bestow your mercy upon him and give him liberation in Vaikuntha. He said, is that all you want? He said, that's all I want. He said, it will be done. So he came out, and some days later, Ramanujacharya met him. He saw he was still blind. He said, what did you ask for? He told him. Ramanujacharya, the amazing thing is this. Every time the deity said, yes, I will forgive them and give them elevation to Vaikuntha, Koresh became completely ecstatic in spiritual bliss. His happiness was just seeing other people's happiness. He just didn't care anything about himself. He was in ecstasy. So when he came before Ramanujacharya, Ramanuja said that you are a very selfish person. Sometimes Gurudev says like that. He says, you're a very selfish person. All you're concerned with is your own ecstasy. But what about me? You're so busy thinking about your own happiness, that you're not thinking about my happiness. That's just selfishness. You surrendered your life to me. Therefore, your body is my property. It's not your property, it's my property. And it is my property that has been defiled. And I want that back. Koresh became so happy. He was thinking, I'm the least amongst all the disciples of my Gurudev, and yet he has just told me that he's accepted my body and my life as his own. That's the perfection of my life. He was so happy to hear that. Now Ramanuja, he said, go to the deity of Bhadar Vraj and tell him that I want my property back. So Koresh went back to Kanchipuram, and he sang bhajans and harinam all day long, and the deity said to him, Koresh, please wait one moment. The deity said to him, Koresh, what benediction would you like? And Koresh, with a very humble heart, he said, I lost two very valuable possessions of my Gurudev. He entrusted them to me, and I lost them. Please give them back to my Gurudev. The deity, Krishna, said to Koresh that the benediction will be fulfilled. And when he heard that, Koresh fell unconscious. And when he woke up, he had his eyes. Perfect vision. Please note that Ramanujacharya understood in this Koresh, within his heart, it was just impossible for him to ask anything for himself. even though his guru ordered him, he just couldn't do it. To ask the Lord for something for myself was impossible. He could only ask for others. Therefore, Ramanujacharya tricked him and said, "You ask for me." When he came back, Ramanujacharya was very, very happy. Koresh gave his life and soul, along with Andal, his wife. They had two children. And Ramanujacharya personally named them Parasara and Vyas, fulfilling the order of his Gurudev to name someone Parasara. So here is an example of a grihastha, a man and wife who are living by the highest spirit of selfless devotional service to Guru and to Krishna. And whatever came upon them, they were grateful. If we're only grateful for the good things that come, then we're not really grateful. To be grateful for whatever situation Krishna gives us. Because in that situation is the opportunity to surrender. In that situation is the opportunity to show our love for him. Our beloved Srila Prabhupada, he had heart attacks. He was in poverty in New York City. People were threatening his life. People stole his possessions. He was always grateful just for the opportunity to serve in that situation. And his disciples, even though they were just whatever little they could do, he was so grateful. Govinda Dasi Mataji, how much was Prabhupada grateful for every little thing you did? Yes? So to be grateful to Srila Prabhupada for his sacrifice is a very, very important part of our relationship to Krishna. Prabhupada sacrificed everything to give us bhakti. To be grateful is to reciprocate. Prabhupada said that the International Society for Krishna Consciousness was his body. It's his offering to the parampara. To try to make it wonderful, to try to make it good for Prabhupada is an act of reciprocating. It's an act of gratitude. To live by the principles he has given us, which is only for our sake. Nothing, he wanted nothing for himself. Everything was for us. Really, to show our gratitude to Prabhupada is just to accept what he gives us and reciprocate. So on this day of Thanksgiving, let us thank Shri Shri Radha and Krishna, Rukmini Dev, Dwarkatish, for all they are giving us. I'll be there in a few minutes. Thank you. And let us thank Srila Prabhupada for giving us Radha, Rukmini, Dwarkatish, and the whole spiritual world and their unlimited causeless mercy. And let us be grateful for every Vaishnav who has ever helped us in any way. Let us be grateful to every Vaishnav who have ever once pleased Srila Prabhupada by helping him. Whatever their condition may be, we should be grateful. This person has helped my Gurudev. My Gurudev loves them. It is this gratitude that makes the heart a fertile field for the seed of devotion, love of God, to grow. I am grateful to all of you for sitting through this long class today and for bestowing so much mercy upon me. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.